Hi, my name is Sean Hayes, and I feel indifferent about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Okay, that is a body blow.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey there. Welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, my podcast. And I should say our podcast. It really is a group effort with one person doing most of the work.
Oh, okay.
Oh, thank you.
No. I'm so nicely done. Having a blast again. And I have to say the podcast has been a special treat. There's something about keeping our little group alive. It's like we're in a little lifeboat together.
We are.
Floating through a sea of... Well, I don't want to say COVID, but...
Oh, God.
No, not at that. But yeah. we're floating along in isolation, but we're together. We're also connected. Well, Sona, you're here in the studio with me.
I am, yeah.
And it's nice to see you.
Thank you. We both get tested every week. We're at the theater together when we tape the show. So,
we're being very responsible. And, of course, Matt Gourley, not with us, probably more of a germaphobe.
Yeah, why don't you want to be here with us?
Yeah, why don't you want to be with us? You are in your home right now, is that right, Gourley?
Yeah, it's not a germ thing.
Oh, I get it.
He doesn't want to put on pants.
Yeah, he doesn't want to put on pants. Yeah, you're not, what are you wearing today? You're wearing pajama bottoms.
Well, I'm dressed from the top up and then, I have pajama bottoms below.
Wow, look at that. Those are great 1950s pajama bottoms.
I know, Amanda calls them my dirty Johns because they look like hospital scrubs.
No, you really do look like Eisenhower recovering from his second heart attack.
That's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
Yeah, it'll be the last nice thing I ever say, but you're at home, and I could tell. I don't think it's happening right now, but a second ago, just as we came on the air, if anyone heard a strange sound in the background, it sounded like a leaf blower right outside your house.
It seems to happen anytime we record. It's like a Murphy's Law that leaf blower comes around.
Yeah, I despise leaf blowers.
What? Yeah.
Well, they just seem like it's this giant machine that's job. It seems like it uses a lot of gasoline and makes a ton of noise and it just shoots leaves all over the place. I don't know. I feel like there's a better way.
I wish I had a leaf blower.
I've got an electric leaf blower and you can't hear it as much.
Who makes an electric leaf blower?
DeWalt.
Oh, DeWalt. They make great tools.
Yeah.
This is a fascinating conversation.
Well, I'm just saying if you're the people at DeWalt are like, I can't believe we're not even paying for this. No, an electric leaf blower seems like the way to go.
Yeah. And if you're listening, DeWalt, I want one of those little cordless hand routers.
What is that?
It's just, you know, you can make edges on woods and stuff like that.
Edges on woods. No, I don't want this. I do not want this podcast to be a place of commerce or business. We do this out of love. We don't do this raise money.
You love talking about State Farm all the time.
You know what? State Farm has so many, they have so many more reps than you think they do. They really do. Throw a stick in any direction and you'll hit 7 State Farm reps. The coverage is unbelievable. And you know what? No idea if I'm getting paid or not. No idea. But you say DeWalt makes a nice leaf blower?
Every tool I have is DeWalt. My garage looks like a black and yellow bumblebee hive of power tools. It's heaven.
Yeah. No, you are real. You're a guy that likes to get out there and use power tools. Because I cannot say I am. I am not someone who uses
power tools. Sorry.
Oh, that's a good one, Sona.
Huh?
Okay.
I feel like Matt can build anything.
You are a talented builder. I've seen some of the things that you've built. You've built some lanterns. You've built some things around the house. You do have talents that don't come forth on the podcast because we can't see them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So people that listen to the podcast are like, well, what's with him? And I'm like, no. He makes really good birdhouses.
Have you ever made a birdhouse? That's why you keep me on the podcast?
Yeah, you're a good builder. You're a real good builder, man.
No, I've never built a birdhouse, but I was going to build one for my wife, and I don't even want to tell you what it was going to be like.
Tell us.
It was going to be that Van Damme house from North by Northwest. You know that famous cantilever house? Yeah.
Is that a real house?
No, it was just made for the movie. It's a model.
You were going to do a recreation of the house that Cary Grant has to break into.
Yeah.
In order to try and save, help me.
Eva
Not
Marie
Piper
Saint?
Laurie. Eva Marie saying, that's crazy, a birdhouse in that shape. So the bird...
But it's cantilevered, so it would have the little ledge that the bird could sit on and pick at the seed.
The things I've accomplished during this quarantine are, I built a 1917 sup with camel from an old kit. And I built a Lego Land Rover. Oh, and I talked to my children's son. So
that's an accomplishment during COVID.
In that order.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. I didn't do any
sort of
that.
Sort of met
stuff.
My son.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I was talking to my daughter and she went, what about my brother? And I'm just like, oh, okay, I should meet him now. So yeah. I met him. Yeah. Yeah, I'm in show business. I'm one of those, you know, cold fathers that turns it on for the camera. And then once the camera's off, I'm just this cold creep.
Yeah, we know.
Oh, got quiet.
I watched a lot of shows.
So. I have too. What are you watching these days?
Cobra Kai.
Oh, me
which
too.
Which I love.
Me too, yeah.
Cobra Kai.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what else I started watching was Selling Sunset.
Oh, God.
I started watching Selling Sunset and oh my God, of all the reality shows, that is the fakest.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I can't believe how fake that is. It's about them selling real estate.
Yes.
And the two guys that run the company, the Oppenheimer twins, will come into a room and say, well, ladies, I know we all get along and you're all thick as thieves and the best of friends. We're introducing a new girl into the equation. And they'll cut to one woman, Christine or whatever, and she'll be like, ugh. And they'll say, I hope you all get along. I'd hate there for there to be any friction. They leave the room and they're all like, Christine, you better be nice. And she's like, well, you know me, I'm a bitch. That's what I am. So let's see this new girl. Then Chriselle walks in.
Chriselle? Is that real?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Chriselle. Her name was made of two other girls' names that crashed into each other.
Come on.
And they're like, oh, hi, Chriselle. And she's like, hi, everybody. I come from very modest means, but I hope to do a good job. Cut to the mean one. Look at those shoes. Who does she think she is? And you're off to the races. There's not a real human moment in the whole thing.
But you and watch yet, all of it.
Oh, I'm watching it, and my wife is saying, oh my God, I can't believe Christine got mad at Chriselle. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
So our marriage is over.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that coming.
No, I mean, I can't. If she's going to be that easily duped, I can't be with her.
Oh.
So it's over with Liza, and now I'm dating Chriselle. Well,
oh my God.
Yeah, we're keeping it on the down low. We're not telling a lot of people.
You know, Liza gets me in the divorce, so...
You always say that.
Yeah, so I'm just...
My favorite line of yours is you said once, Liza's the only part of you I like.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
Oh,
you know?
My God, I've been watching some garbage.
Me too.
Oh, and I love it.
Skin Wars.
What?
What's Skin Wars?
It's the same old, reality competition show, but of body painting.
Oh. Do you see a lot of nude bodies?
Pasty-covered nude bodies, yeah.
Oh, my God.
What's wrong with a...
What a creep.
Hey, what's wrong with a pasty nude body?
I mean, they're pasties on the nipples. Like the pasta.
I thought you were shaming people that have pasty nude bodies, and I was gonna take you to court.
The first question you ask, are they nude?
I know.
Is there any nudity?
Do I get to see boobies?
Will there be boobage?
Side boob leading to front boob.
I ask that when I go to any museum.
What?
The first thing I do when I check in is they say, you know, you have to pay for your ticket, and I go, will I see any nude bodies? Oh, and they'll be like, well, I mean, I suppose there's a couple of paintings where there's some nudity. Well, I see boobage. I guess there's a Raphael. There's a Michelangelo that has some.
Oh, jeez. There's a creep alert.
They threw me out of the Vatican because I was looking up at the Sistine Chapel shouting, various nudities.
Ew,
and I was sort of clawing at the air like if I could only reach it. literally a good 85 feet still away. And I'm like, oh, to touch the supple nudes.
This is why I don't come into the studio. I stay at home.
Yes. Nicely done.
Yeah. Very smart.
You'll never, we'll be 10 years past COVID and you'll still be, yeah.
Just concerned.
Just don't think it's safe yet.
Oh my God. Don't think it's safe.
Okay. Well, we cannot waste any more time. Because we have, not that we've wasted time, I think any exchanges with either of you are true gold. But we got to talk to our guest. My guest today, a very talented actor and producer who starred as Jack McFarlane for 11 seasons on the hit NBC series Will and Grace. He also co-hosts a new podcast along with Jason Bateman and, sadly, Will Arnett. Someone had to take him. No, seriously, it is a very, very funny show. I did it and it was a blast. And it's called Smartless. And new episodes drop every Monday, and it really is a good time. I'm very excited he's with us today. One quick note, at one point during our interview, this gentleman had to switch computers. He was having difficulty with one. He switched to another one, so there's going to be some audio change there. Come on, man. It's quarantine. We're all getting by the best we can. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to hear any complaints from you Sonic snobs. Anyway, Sean Hayes, welcome. How dare you? How dare you, sir?
We've already wasted a half an hour on technical problems.
Yes. Well, you know, I was told to be here right on time, and I was. And okay. Then I watch you fail to work your audio for a half hour, and I've never been, this is the angriest I've been in my entire career.
Yeah, no, I can sense it. And I actually fail to watch you work on your core for a while. I feel excited about being Conan O'Brien's friend. I fail.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Okay. So we're going to...
Because we're rolling, right? And you know I have a heart out in 10, right?
What are you drinking there? You've got some kind of liquid? What is that?
I'll give you one guess.
I can't figure it out. It says giant... I've never seen larger font for any product. It says water all over the side, like in a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
I know, right? Oh, I thought this was a game where we do every other word.
Oh, God. What a...
You are...
The best...
No, that was too many. You already lost. That's two words. Oh, God.
Okay.
You want to do it again?
Yeah, let's try it. You
are...
The...
Best...
Person...
I've...
Ever...
No.
Named...
Sean.
No! Supposed to be Conan at the end.
Oh, sorry.
That was a horrible game. Anyone listening right now is thinking, I could get into comedy. You know, I want to start by complimenting you, which is...
Okay. You really want to use the whole time on that?
I'm going to spend the whole time complimenting you. No, you're one of the quickest. You're one of the quickest and funniest people I know. No, let me get this out, because there's more. And it gets bad really fast. You're cruel. You're arbitrary. There was a lot of bad stuff coming that I wanted to get in. I just want to get this in, which is that I do know you out. You know, we have been friendly and we have gone out and dined together, broken bread. Liza came along. Scotty came along and we had a really good time. And what I remember afterwards is driving home and realizing that you and I were doing 35 bits a second. And I was thinking,
I know. Scotty and restaurant loved us.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh my God. They were like, please keep saying that only louder. But I realized that you're one of those people who I can't stop. I don't think you can stop. And I really do believe that if someone had come in and given me tragic news, I'd have been like, anyway, look at this, Sean. You know, like right back to this.
Wait, do you ever do that? Do you ever get bad news and just start laughing because it makes you so uncomfortable?
If it's about someone else's life, yeah. If it's happened to someone else, I just can't stop laughing.
My mom had cancer when she was 2. Wait, that's not funny.
What?
At all. That's not funny. When she was 2 years old, she had cancer and she had her eye removed, okay? And that's very, very sad. Uh-huh. But my mom was so effing funny. So she had a fake eye her whole life, like Sandy Duncan, right?
Right.
And we used to do the craziest shit with her extra eye in front of her. And we always used to make fun of her to her face. And she would laugh hysterically. And that's what I mean. It's like taking somebody's, you know, pain and making it funny because they wanted that. Like my mom lived for us making fun of her.
Right. So she, let me get this straight. She had an extra eye. She had
she didn't have three eyes. She had two eyes.
Right.
Period. That's the end of the sentence.
Right. She had an eye. But you said we would pick up the extra eye.
Her extra eye. She had an extra eye in a box in her jewelry box upstairs in her bedroom. And on Halloween or any night, really, we would have friends come over and knock on the door. And there was a chain on our door. Mm-hmm. And we'd have the eye, the fake eye, the glass eye in our hand. And we'd open the door just enough for the chain to open it. And we'd stick our hand through the chain and go, "Who's there?"
Have the eye move around.
Yeah, have the eye move around.
And your mom was cool with that.
She loved it. She loved that. And sometimes we'd let it roll on the floor with and the dog would play with it.
That's, no, but then she has to put that in her eye socket. That's not sanitary.
Yeah.
No, that's terrible.
Not sanitary. Yeah. But no, she would clean it before she put it in her eye socket.
That's one of those things that exposure to that early on, you make a decision. You either decide I'm going to block this memory out and only uncover it later on, or I'm going to be funny about it. Those are your two choices.
Sure. I mean, we got a new puppy and I give him choices like that every day. That's why I expose him to as many things as possible.
That's good. You want the dog to be funny. I always say people get obsessed with, will my dog shit in the house, or will the dog respect not getting up on the sofa? And I think that can wait, that stuff.
Right. Or masturbation. Like, you're going to end up masturbating in front of a pet of some kind.
Yes.
So it's best they get used to it early on.
No, I do that before I pick the pet. When they're all in their cages, I walk around doing it. And whichever one is sort of seems like okay with it, I'm like, I'll take that one, you know?
What about the people that work there?
Oh, please. They know the deal. They know the deal. When they got into the business.
You did, that's how you met Liza. You just did it in front of a bunch of women.
I did it a bunch of, exactly. I went to a lot of pet stores, and then there was one where this lovely lady said, "Look, you know, I can live with that." I said, "Will you marry me?" And then she said, "Well, put that away. Let's get
started.
We'll talk." But I won't have that part. You are so fast. And I was thinking that in that dinner, even as we were walking to the cars in the parking lot, it's still going. I just thought afterwards, I was laughing on the way home. And then my wife was just like, "Yep. Well, you two found each other."
Exactly.
You two idiots. Well,
also, Scotty and Liza found each other.
Yes.
In a support group for people that can't deal with their spouses, that can't stop.
Scotty was doing a really funny thing at that dinner, which is you and Liza were sitting on one side of the table and Scotty and I were sitting on the other side of the table. And he has, I hope this is okay to reveal, he had
diabetes. Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah, he has diabetes. And so I didn't know this, but I just went to pat him on the shoulder like, there, old friend. And he has a thing on his back, I guess, that regulates.
Yeah. We call it the pod of life.
Yes. It regulates insulin. And it's this little thing that you'd never notice. It's under his shirt. But I pat him on the back and I felt this plastic thing on his back. And I instinctively started to go like, "Oh my God," like, "Oh, I'm sorry." And he immediately collapsed dead on this. And then later on in the same evening, I forgot. And I'm like, "Oh yeah, that's right." And I put my hand on him and he again, without instantly collapsed.
And you literally just described our sex life too.
So when you're ready for it to be over, you just, you know, you hit the diabetes.
Put my hand on it and we both fall asleep.
Wait, why do you fall asleep? I don't understand that.
Because I feel bad.
Okay, all right. When you're filled with shame, you feel bad. We do have a lot in common. I really believe that. We're both incredibly talented. Conan, stop. No, we're both. I'm not allowed to do that. No,
you should have more things with your name on them.
I know. I put the Conan logo on my son's forehead. It's like the Mike Tyson tattoo.
You branded him.
I branded him. Yeah. I said, "Look, you're out in the world. That's advertising." And he gets beaten regularly by the other kids.
And you put horseshoes on the bottom of his feet so you could hear him coming in the middle of the night.
Son, you're going to wear these horseshoes so that when you do try to kill me in the middle of the night for branding Conan on your forehead, I'll hear you coming.
I'm going to hear you coming.
Just this normal family stuff. You come from a big family, as do I. I think we both have five kids in your family. There were six in mine.
There was six in ours, but we gave them to yours.
I know. Now we're in 11. Well, there's 11 kids in our family now.
Right.
I'm very fascinated. Something is I got interested in music later on, but you were so talented at music. You almost like a prodigy. You were really talented at the piano very early and took to it right away. First of all, I think there's a very strong connection between music and comedy. I think.
Yeah, for sure. The obvious about the rhythm and rhythm and the beats and the timing, all that. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but I also think I knew it was comedy or it was nothing, but you had this really viable, cool other choice, which is concert pianist.
Alcohol.
Well, okay. I don't think that's exclusive of anything else. I mean, I've managed to be in the business and abuse alcohol.
Sure.
But you, I think that's a little bit of a different story where you could have, I mean, like Steve Martin. Steve Martin could have made a career playing the banjo if anybody could. He's really talented, but.
Yeah, he's amazing. I started playing piano when I was five and all through high school and college. And I auditioned for the Chicago Symphony when I was like 17. But the pressure and the stress of having to hit every single note correctly all the time is a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though I went through all these competitions and all of this stuff, and it was my major in college. But that stress where like the notes are the notes, right? So Beethoven and Schubert and Schumann and Scarlatti and whoever, if you miss the note, it rings so loudly and everybody notices. But if you are in comedy and you're stand-up or you're acting or whatever, and you screw up, you can A, do it again, or B, kind of cover your ass by making a joke about the joke that didn't work.
Yes.
Like you can fix it in the moment. But you can't fix notes that have been on the page for literally centuries. So I was okay with being done with that kind of pressure. But and also like in college when it was my major, the funny people are just more fun. And not that musicians aren't fun. Most of them are a blast. But in college, I always felt like the best joke, you know, the music people were making were like, don't be sharp, don't be flat, just be natural. And I was like, okay, I'll see you over at the theater department.
Because yeah. I was like, I never want to go. What horrible, horrible people would make that joke. And I don't care what their musical abilities. If you make that joke, you're dead to me.
Right. But I was one of those people. I had on my refrigerator a pad that said Chopin list.
Oh God!
So you know it's endless. The puns are endless.
Yeah. So well, now I don't want to talk to you. And it's way too early in the interview to sign off. So now I just have to vamp.
If you did, I would just say, Dad.
Dad, is that you? I was always drawn to comedy because these other pursuits are kind of monastic. Like if you want to be a great pianist, you have to go in a room and shut the door, grind. And there's something about comedy. I love being around funny people and trying to play with them and bounce off of what they're saying. If everybody's laughing really hard and you have these moments that seem kind of magical, whether it's in a writer's room or in front of an audience, it feels like you're not alone.
Have you ever worked with somebody that doesn't understand that concept? Because that's tough. It's tough when you are a funny person that just wants to be silly and make people laugh, and you want to be around other people that do the same thing. But certain people maybe that are in your life or that have been in your life don't really see it as that, and they see it as competition.
Right.
And that's when it gets like, oh, sad. And then all the joy.
When has that happened to you?
Well, you know, it's happened in my life at some point.
You mean with other comedy people?
Well, people that claim they're in comedy, but then don't enjoy being around, you know, being around other funny people.
I used to find it a little problematic at Saturday Night Live, as much as that being on that show changed my life. And there was so much competition there and people jockeying for a limited amount of airtime.
It's built that way.
Yes.
Like to me, it was always like a fun thing. Like, I want you to make me laugh and I want to make you laugh. And that's it. It starts and stops there. But people who take it beyond that are like, I'm going to be the funniest person. Well, now all the joy is gone.
Yes. There are people that look at comedy and they as a competitive sport. and they actually use a lot of sports analogies.
Right.
You know, I killed, I hit a home run, you know, I sank a three-pointer, whatever. They just, and you, and I always think I sort of got into comedy to get away from that. I don't like,
right.
I don't like the whole, we're both going to take our comedy dicks out and see who wins.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I didn't like that. And I didn't like it for good reason.
Right. Although that said, I feel like this show is a touchdown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This show, the one we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. You think it's
trying to make a sports analogy, but it's failed. So we can probably cut that out.
Oh, no. We're going to feature that. We're going to feature that because now I'm putting up who wins. That was just, we just lost a point and I've gone up a point. No, but I definitely think that people that get into it that way, at Saturday Night Live heard it. And then when I was at The Simpsons, everybody's just trying to think of whoever can think of the funny end of the scene. We all get to go home. You know what I mean?
Right. It was right. Like even on Will and Grace, some of the camera guys would be like, hey, what if you did this? And I'd be like, that's hilarious. Yeah, I'm totally doing that.
That's in violation of the Writers Guild.
Sure.
And I'm actually on the Writers Guild side on this one. And
okay.
So I'll be getting the names of those camera people and sure. I'll be seeing to it that they don't work again.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. Harm and foul, you know? And since I said I hate it when people use sports analogies, that's all we've done. You know what I mean?
I know, right.
You took my analogy and you've like run the 4-minute mile with it.
Oh my God.
Wait, go back to your dick size for a second. So you were laughing. Why were you laughing?
Well, it was one of those embarrassed laughs, like, you know, okay. Sort of the implication being that if I was in a dick contest, I wouldn't do that well. But we all know that's a joke. I joke about it because it's not a problem.
See, now mine would have echoed probably longer than that.
Mine would have too, but the cave collapsed because the cave felt bad. The cave felt so bad for my penis.
I understand.
So you decide, I mean, that's the other thing too, is that this whole time that you're this fantastic pianist, you must have known you had superpowers in comedy, that you could really make people laugh.
Well,
or did you not? Was it something that was like hidden?
I think, you know, as a kid, I grew up in chaos, right? And I loved my brothers very much and I loved my sister very much. We had an alcoholic father and who was absent all the time and then finally left when I was like 5 or 6 years old. And so my mom raised 5 kids by herself and there was so much pain. And I mean, that's like another podcast conversation, but I think that's why everybody in my family's funny. You know, everybody has a quick, dark wit. And I think that was our coping mechanism, you know, newsflash, it's the biggest cliche in the world. You know, and I'm no different. And so we grew up just with the most ridiculous things, like making videos that were like horror films in our house. We used to play a game when my mom would go bowling every Thursday night was the night that we had free in the house. And we kind of grew up parenting ourselves, but even though she was the best parent in the world, so we would have knife fights. We would turn off all the lights in the house and invite friends over, and we'd throw steak knives at each other.
Oh my God! Wait, how is this a game? How do you play that for 30 seconds and not kill somebody?
I think the game is if you're alive at the end, you win.
But didn't people get really hurt?
It was a soft throw,
right? So and then it's fine.
Then it's fine. We used to do that, and we used to couple that with called Tiger in the Grass. So we'd throw knives. And play Tiger in the Grass, which was you'd have to be on all fours. And there'd be like 20 kids at our house playing this in the dark, complete dark, crawling around. And if you touched somebody, they were out. Right. Or something like that. I don't know.
Right. Well, there's no fun because there's no knife involved in that one. There's just in that one, you just put battery acid all over the floor. And then people had to stay crouched, even though the hands on the flesh on their hands was burning. Yeah.
Right. And the winner would get skin grafts.
Yeah, exactly.
But, but anyways. So
but this is what I can relate to is the craziness of my parents were really busy and there was a lot of craziness. And this was like a typical thing that happened. My brother Luke and I slept in one room and my brother Neil, who was the oldest, came crashing into our door on a Saturday morning. thing and just started hurling pillows at us and laughing and was really getting on our nerves. He was much bigger than us. And then we jumped out of our beds to chase him. He started to run down the stairs in the front hall. And as he rounded the corner, we both, my brother Luke and I, shoved him and he went off the stairs and fell into the front hall where he remained motionless.
Oh my God.
So my brother Luke and I walked down. And we're like the Menendez brothers. We just walk down. We get to the bottom of the stairs.
Nothing to see here.
Yeah.
Nothing to see
here.
We
get to the bottom of the stairs. We step over Neil, who's moaning, going, oh. We step over him, and we go in and start watching Saturday morning cartoons. He's lying there, and we watch, and time lapse, we watch all of the Warner Brothers cartoons. Then we watch all of Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids. Then we're watching Bugaloos. We're watching all the shows that came on Saturday mornings. Neil isn't moving. And finally, we noticed parents showing up. We notice murmuring. We notice that Neil's being taken out, like carried out.
Then Neil's somebody has a shotgun. Then Neil's, that's weird.
Then Neil's at the hospital. We're still watching TV. And then Neil comes back from the hospital with a giant cast on his wrist because he shattered his wrist. And our parents like come in and go, what? You just sat. And we were like, huh?
Yeah.
Well,
right.
He threw a pillow at us.
Right,
he stepped over what could have been his dead body. And didn't give a shit.
And it's weird, when they removed him, they already put the chalk around
it. Yeah. We just, I don't know. I was just like, what? And I look back on that and I think, what sociopaths we were.
Yeah. Look, I'm sorry. This could be a whole episode of just these fucking stories. But my brother Kevin, who I love very, very much, he made darts out of needles and paper, right? Mm-hmm. And I was trying to escape him and he threw them at me as I was running past and they all stuck in my back. And I say, that's how acupuncture was invented.
You know what I love is that anytime we tell these stories, and you're very good at this, you always go, now, my brother Kevin, I love him. But whenever someone says that about a sibling or says it about a family member, like my brother Luke, I love him to death. But I was walking along one day and, he took a rotary saw and he cut both of my legs off. It always leads to something absolutely horrible.
I'm not even making this up. I remember being 2 or 3 years old and my grandma, who was the best grandma ever, fell down the stairs. And I remember standing at the top of the stairs, just looking at her like, I didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
She was at the bottom of the stairs. Oh, that was awful. But that's not a funny story. But another story.
Well, the first thing, you go through her purse.
Second of all, I change all the signatures to her will.
Yes. There's three things you do immediately. It's just go through the purse, change the signatures on the will, and then, and then you're halfway there. And then get the car
keys.
And
then maybe throw down some pasta to her. my brother Mike, this is so great, who I love too. To get back at my dad one time, my dad would come home drunk and want to make like eggs. And I don't know why eggs all the time. But and my brother took the spoon or the fork. And when he wasn't looking, my dad wasn't looking. It was like in the bathroom while his eggs were cooking. Put the handle over the burner for like 2 minutes and then carefully placed it back on his little thing. So when he grabbed it, he was like, motherfucker, God damn, I want out of this family. This family's ridiculous. You know?
There's no way that growing up in chaos and having your dad leave when you're 5 doesn't create all the mechanisms that you need. Like, the world is chaos, so I'm going to embrace the absurd. I'm going to completely embrace the absurd.
I remember my sister, I was maybe 4, and she's like, I want to go over to my friend Becky's house. And my mom's like, okay, bring your brother because I got to go to the store. Okay, so she brought me and put me in a dress and made me sit on the curb waiting for her outside as cars were driving by. 4 years old in a dress, not really understanding the situation at all. And why did she have to put me in a dress to go over to her friend's house?
So how do you make this transition? You're playing the piano. How do you...
From a woman to a man?
Yes. Hey, you were a girl and you were sitting on the stoop waiting for your mom, and then you became this very funny actor.
Well, you know, so like I said, I studied piano for like maybe 15 years or something. And then, you know, I was always a fan of Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. And my dad would come in and out of our, he left, I think, officially when I was like 5 or 6, but would come in and out for, I don't know what, it's kind of all foggy to me, but one day he would be at the house, the next day he wouldn't. But whenever he was in the house, I didn't want to see him or talk to him or do anything. So I would go to my bedroom and lock myself in there and watch either reruns of Saturday Night Live or Saturday Night Live on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. And I would just dream of being on that show and wanted to hang out. And then I would do what every kid did, was go back to school on Monday and imitate Billy Crystal imitating Lorenzo Lamas.
Right,
or
right.
Imitate Marty Short imitating anybody, you know. Well, this just popped in my head, that might be interesting to your listener, is that you actually...
I'm going to add an S. I'm going to make that, if it costs me $10,000, I'm going to add an S to that listener.
Okay, so Conan O'Brien actually, when I finally got my dream come true to host Saturday Night Live, helped me write my monologue.
Yeah, I remember this. And the funny thing is, I was not a writer at Saturday Night Live when I did it. It was when I was, it was years into doing the late night show.
Right, and I popped over there mm-hmm. to say hello, because I was such a big fan,
I lost you around 2006. I think I lost you. Yeah, I did one bit you didn't like, and you were out. Yeah.
No, I walked over there. You were so kind, and I said, "I'm having trouble with the angle, blah blah blah." And you were like, "It was this piano bit where I came out and played the piano," and I think it was you and or together, Mike Schur, who's also brilliant, came up with the Beethoven thing where I go da 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 dum, and then in between, I would do some crazy thing like shave and do mm-hmm, or mm-hmm. solve a. You said, "Why don't you solve a Rubik's cube?" Mm-hmm. And so I went da 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 da, and I solved a Rubik's cube. Da 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 da, da 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 da. At this Beethoven thing, it was really, really funny.
And you never paid me. I was never paid.
No.
You went around the Writers Guild to America.
I cannot take responsibility for your business manager's practices.
So, you know, it's two things I want to say. First of all, so how crazy is that you grow up watching Saturday Night Live and that is your escape, and then you get to walk through the doors? It's impossible not to think life is magical.
Ah, absolutely.
Wait a minute. I prayed to this false idol, the television, and then somehow I went into it.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, really fucking weird. Like, also, I was also obsessed with TV. I grew up in the 70s and 80s, so TV was everything, right? Mm-hmm. And I was obsessed. And I have a bunch of these stories, and I don't know why they happened to me, but these coincidences. So when I was very young, 6, 7, 8, we had extended family move from Chicago to San Diego. And so we would visit them a couple times in my life, 2 or 3 times. And one of the times we drove up from San Diego to see a taping of a show called Laugh-In, mm-hmm. which I'm told was filmed on mm-hmm. stage 17 at CBS Radford, which is where we filmed Will and Grace.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So I think that shit is bizarre.
Yeah.
And so Saturday Night Live, that story, and I have like a few other stories like that where it's bizarre. I really do believe in manifesting things. And I know that sounds corny, but
no, I don't think that's corny. I do think there's some power to, because I had the same experience. We've both had the opportunity to meet so many talented people, but there's this magic to anytime I brush up against something that I saw from my childhood. When I was
hashtag me too. Hashtag me too.
Yeah. Like when I was sitting on the iron grate in our little like sort of playroom area where the TV was, and I saw something that really impressed me or wowed me on the little television. And then all these years later, I encounter that person.
Yes.
And it's always hard for me to shake that first association. And we just recently, sadly, lost Regis Philbin. Regis Philbin passed away.
Yeah,
and I had this memory, such a lovely guy. And I had this memory of the first time I met him, this was like 1993, and I had been named as the replacement for David Letterman, but I hadn't gone on yet. And we were scrambling that summer to put the show together. And I'm walking along and I bump into Regis Philbin, and he was on his way, I think, back from doing his show on the Upper West Side. And I'll never forget, he had a garment bag slung over one shoulder, and he was just Regis Philbin. He was not one of those guys who became somebody else. He was Regis Philbin, but he bumped into me and he was like, "So Conan, you know, you're feeling Conan." He used to call me Conan. "Conan, you feeling good about taking over the late night show? You think you're going to be ready?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm scared and I think it's going to be tough, but we've got some funny ideas." "That's good. That's good." And then I said, "By the way," and this is my favorite show when I was a kid was Get Smart. And there was one episode where Get Smart is in a bakery. And this is, I guess, when Regis's career, you know, I think he was kind of known as like the sidekick to Joey Bishop, but he wasn't a star yet. So he played the baker in a bakery. And so I just said, "I really loved you on Get Smart when you were the baker." And it was like this small scene from a part of his career. And I'll never forget, he was like, "The baker? Get Smart? That's what you know me from? That's what you remember me from?" He couldn't believe it. And he was with someone. He was like, this guy's bringing up the baker from Get Smart. I shot that in 1966. I had no money. You know, it was just like, he couldn't.
Wait, but I can't tell. Was that a good thing or a bad thing?
That was
a good thing.
Well, like
he loved that.
I know. I don't think he loved it. I think he was sort of just like, "How the fuck do you remember that? And why aren't we talking about the massive success I've had since then?" And, you know, I think it would be, if someone walked up to you today and said, you know, "Hey, Sean, yes, I really loved you as waiter number 4.
I'm always shocked when somebody says anything other than Will and Grace.
You know? Well, Three Stooges.
Three Stooges, yeah. That was, I have to say,
when I heard that project that you guys... First of all, I didn't hear who was attached to it yet, but when I heard that they were going to recreate the Three Stooges, I said, "Impossible, can't be done, and I pity anyone involved in this project." And then I hear that you're involved, I hear these other very talented people are involved, and then I see it, and I'm howling the whole time. I thought you were brilliant, and I thought you guys did the impossible.
Well, thanks. I want to talk about that, because Billy West... Do you know Billy West?
Yes, of course, yeah.
He's a genius. So nobody does a better Larry from the Three Stooges than Billy West. So the Farrelly brothers, who directed the movie, they're like, "Well, we want you to go meet with Billy West, and he's going to teach you how to talk like Larry." And I was like, okay. I mean, he's genius. So I did not know that Billy West was the voice of both sometimes, Ren and Stimpy.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And so he goes, "Stimpy..." He goes, "If you ever need a quick fix on to jog your memory on where to place it in your mouth, the voice of Larry, just listen to Stimpy. I'm just doing a Larry impression."
Oh, wow.
So I was like, "Oh, that's fascinating." So when I got when he explained it to me and we worked on it, this I'll do a little bit. It goes, "Hey, quit horsing around, you till you're disturbing my coffee break." Right?
That's fantastic. Right?
So the whole movie, I had to talk like this. You know?
You have to like change the shape of your palate to do that. That's incredible.
But it was great. It was a great lesson. And it's really kind of fun to do it. A donut remover. He says, "Oh, do not remove." Okay. So wait. So
yeah. Three Stooges get maligned a lot. You know, just by people who say, "Oh, that's idiocy," and I mean, like, and also there's this, I think, false idea out there that only guys like the Three Stooges. And I went, no, it's just so brilliant because they do the same thing the Marx Brothers do, which is they don't waste time explaining how the Three Stooges got into that situation. You know what I mean?
Right,
they just they cut through all that shit. And I think more movies should do this. A movie always has to spend 40 minutes explaining how the funny character got to be mistaken for a brain surgeon.
Right.
What the Three Stooges would do, and the Marx Brothers and a lot of those classic movies, is they would say, "We need a brain surgeon. Get me Fine Howard." Give me Howard Fine and Howard. And the Three Stooges would come in and they'd be like, "We got this. Yeah. You know, let's cut his head off. You know, And they're kidding and slapping each other. "Gentlemen, please." And you think, who the fuck ever, how did they ever become, no one cared about it. Or if a rich society lady is having a party and there's having a little trouble with the plumbing, call these guys who've never been plumbers before in their life, but they have all
the polloi.
Yes. Yeah. But I love that.
I got it. I'll take care of it. Give me that. Let me through. Yeah.
No, that's more movies should do that. But anyway.
So wait, so back to the idea, though. I know what you mean when you just can't believe your life and you meet, you know, your heroes kind of. And mm-hmm. that happened to me. You know, I used to imitate Steve Martin all the time doing King Tut with I used to take my sweater that I was wearing and put it through my head, you know, like I was taking it off, but I would just stop at removing it off my head and it would look like his kind of King Tut look, you know, like the whatever that is called. And I would imitate the whole thing to and his whole album called Let's Get Small.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, but, yeah.
So I was obsessed with Steve Martin and Marty Short. And it just turns out those two are best friends now, but both of them. And they both become a part of my life now. And I love them so much. And it happened for me when I was sitting with Steve at a lunch one time, and he said, and Steve, you know, is very kind of, it's hard to get in there,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But once you do, he's such a lovely human being. Cause he feels like the rest of us. We're all insecure. But I said, he loves to hear about jokes. So I told him this one joke that I wrote about Kristen Chenoweth. Now, if you don't know who Kristen Chenoweth is, she's this big Broadway star. I did Broadway with her. She's a pretty famous person, but she's also kind of also famous, not for her talent and her voice and her gorgeous looks, but her height. She's very, very small.
Very small.
So I said, she presented me to me this one award, and I said, I asked her if it was okay that I wrote this joke about her, and she said, sure. So I told Steve this joke, and it was, I got up and accepted the award, and I go, I'd like to thank Kristen Chenoweth for giving me this award. I know you're all thinking the same thing I was thinking when I first met Kristen. The circus is in town. And and Steve howled. He goes, can I have that joke? And I'll say it to him. And I'm like, oh my God, Steve Martin just asked for a joke I wrote. I'm like, of course you can have that joke. I would be honored. And if you ever saw Ratatouille at the very end, when the guy serves the food critic the food and the camera goes inside his head and he goes back to his childhood about when he first had that food.
Yes, yes.
And I had that moment where I was like, oh my God, I was a kid imitating Steve Martin. I dreamed of meeting him. I've dreamed of being like have a half of an ounce of talent he did. And here I am having lunch and he just borrowed one of my jokes. And it was just an incredible moment for me.
Well, you know, it's funny because you mentioned Marty Short, and I was thinking about that. You guys are made of similar stuff, you know.
Well,
do you know what I mean? I'm guessing you're how Irish are you?
99%.
Yeah, yeah. You guys both have just that incredible rapid fire, quick 100% commitment.
He's so good and so quick. It's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. I asked him about the Jiminy Glick character, which is also like, you know, infamous now, mm-hmm. and just brilliant. He said, is that a lot of that written or is a lot of that off the top of your head? And he said to me, he goes, you know, Sean, I can't explain it. He said, yes, of course, some of it is written, but most of it just comes to me. Like I said, what about that joke when he was interviewing, I don't remember, Jerry Seinfeld maybe, and they were talking about the Kardashians, and he goes, Kim Kardashian thinks soy milk means I am milk. And I'm like, did you write that? He goes, no, I just thought of that in the moment. I'm like, how does, he goes, I can't explain it. It's this character that the universe just sends me down dialogue and jokes. And I just think it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. He had, did you see his Broadway show? I absolutely love.
Of course I was in it.
Yeah.
When he pulled me up.
Yeah, he pulled me up as well. And man, so it's not, you know, special that he pulled you up.
Special, yeah.
I just want to.
Yeah, I pretty much hit a home run with that. I pretty much hit a home run.
I put it right through the goalposts. And I was carried off the field by fellow jocks. Because the
not by your brother.
Well, he can. His wrist doesn't work. Since he shattered it. You know what I love is you do a podcast with Jason Bateman and Will Arnett. And yes, I associate the two of those guys together, but I love that you're the third part of
Wheel.
Part of the triangle. I just think because I think you provide this, it's just a fantastic addition. It's just like, I hadn't thought of like,
thanks.
And when I heard that the three of you were doing a podcast, I thought, oh, that'd be fun. It'd be really fun to hang out with those guys.
Yeah. And thank you for doing it. You were brilliant on it. By the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not even just saying this. I swear to God, you are one of the best we've done. We've done two. You are one of the best.
Wow.
You're one of the best. We've done a ton.
But you know, it was so much fun.
And you're one of the best.
It's so much fun to, and there is something so delightfully fun about just going at Will Arnett. You know, I don't know what it is. Because he can't be hurt. You know what I mean? You can't hurt his feelings.
I think like you, he's absolutely brilliant. He is another one who's so gifted with a quick wit. And Jason's also incredibly got this gift of the English language.
Yes,
He speaks so efficiently and also so comedically efficiently. The name of the show is called Smart List. That's okay. I'll plug it myself. And
I mentioned it up top. That's okay. I do mention it.
Yeah, but you never said the name of it. That's okay.
I heard that the podcast was no longer available.
While I am here, so I know you're supporting.
Okay. Well, anyway, so apparently it's ended. The podcast is over, right? They don't make them anymore. Is that the idea? And they're not available. You can't get them.
Well, we saw
don't try to look for it because you just can't get it. It's completely unavailable.
We actually did it because we didn't think there were enough podcasts.
Well, you know what? There was a dearth, and then especially during coronavirus when the coronavirus has a podcast now.
it's going viral.
All right. There was a way to just make that not
happen.
Come on,
that's a perfect way to end this.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. You're right.
I meant humanity. But Jason is so brilliant and Will is so brilliant. And a lot of the times I kind of take a happy back seat, watching them go at it. It is just as fun for me to watch and kind of pepper in something every now and then to watch those two go at it because it makes me laugh so hard. And I'm almost like take the position of the listener a lot of the time where I'll throw like a jab in there or two to both of them. And it's always fun, but it is a blast to be a part of that with those guys. And we've known each other for like 20 years.
It's a really good mix of energies. And one of the things I'll say about Jason, his energy, unlike you and me and say a Will Arnett, he has a slower rhythm and he's very dry and it's
brilliant.
It's fantastic. And
it's amazing.
He's so good at it. And when it is like music, it's like the bass note and the high notes. And that's as much as I know about music. I think that's all you really need to know.
I could probably
be a concert pianist too.
Scotty, should we say hello? Should I show Conan? Should I show Conan?
Conan. That's my tribute to Regis. Conan.
Is he still sleeping? He's passed out.
What's this?
All right. So let him stay there. Well,
what are we talking about?
Okay. Talking about Liza. She's here.
My wife is there asleep on the floor?
Yeah. And I just don't feel like waking her. She looks so sound. By the way, she also said, I have not had a good night's sleep in 25 years. Don't let a disturbed wife, No, I'd fuck that up. Let disturbed wives sleep.
Yes.
Wait, let me grab him. Give me 2 seconds.
Okay. All right. But I just hope this is worth it. God, he's put a lot of pressure on this. What's it going to be? It's a podcast. I can't even see. Guys, hey, he's off mic right now so I can criticize him.
What? Uh-oh.
Oh, wait,
what
you came back. I was just totally ripping you a new one as you were gone.
Nobody ever says ripping you an old one. Why is that?
I guess the act of tearing creates a new opening.
All right.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to show you in a little bit. Okay, so what's
up? Is it Larry King?
Wait, what were we talking
about? Is it Larry King?
It's Larry King.
Is Larry King asleep next to you in a crib?
Oh, my gosh. He's so tired. Oh.
I can't see what's happening. Oh, my God.
Oh.
Okay, let me explain. America, the most beautiful. Is that a golden retriever?
It's a cat. No, it's not.
I guess a cat that was playing with some kind of radioactive substance. It's either a horrifying radioactive cat or the cutest puppy.
He's a golden doodle.
He's a golden doodle. He's gorgeous. What's his name?
Ricky.
Oh, Ricky. How old is Ricky?
Ricky's 11 weeks old.
Okay. Remember.
Yeah, he just woke up. He's so
tired. Look, that's a giant yawn. Uh-huh. That's a giant yawn. I'm watching on Zoom right now, and
you're watching Sean's husband do a giant yawn.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful dog. Well, you know what you have to do. You want again this everything
if
comes
hungry.
No, you can't eat the dog, but
okay,
you should create the same chaos for that dog that you had growing up, so that the dog is funny and talented. Okay.
Yeah. He's not escaping this. No way. He's not
gonna, why should he get? Why should he get a free ride? A
free pass. Yeah.
I have taken way too much of your time, but I love talking to you. I really do. You are.
I love you, Conan, so much. You are truly one of my favorite people in the world and one of the funniest people.
Oh, that's
I've ever known.
Sweet. Why do they always cut that part out? That'll never make air. The producer always puts a foghorn over anybody saying anything nice. And Conan, I just want to say, please.
I used to do the good horn, the horn, the bike horn when I was a kid.
That is a sad childhood. That's a lot of time alone in the room. Yeah,
I would call myself to dinner that way.
Sean Hayes, God bless you. And I really do look forward to hanging with you once this COVID nonsense is over.
For sure.
That's
for
what
sure.
Nonsense is what I refer as how I refer to anything that's killed hundreds of thousands of people. But what's all this nonsense in World War I? What's all this World War II nonsense?
It was 1942.
You guys stay safe. I love your new dog. And thank you for being so unbelievably funny.
Of course. Thank you. I love you to death.
Love you too. You have that look in your eye that you have something planned for us today.
There are no surprises. I just thought we might do a nice review the reviewers.
Review the reviewers. That's right. This is when people review us and then I give my comments on their thoughts. Is that correct?
That's right. These are the Apple Podcast reviews. And I'll read them, and they might be ones that have interesting sentiments or whatever, and you can just respond.
What if my feelings are hurt? Aww. Again, this is always God, where I go. I know. And this is always where
and
I go.
Do you ever get your feelings hurt? I always filter these.
No.
Oh, you always, yeah. See, now you're saying there are ones that would hurt my feelings.
No. Damn it, Matt.
Just all I want is for you to say there's never been a negative thought about you in the universe. Oh,
there has never been a negative thought about you in the universe.
And then I want you to go out and destroy hundreds of thousands of opinion pieces that are out there in the world. Okay, I can handle it.
Okay.
Let's do it.
This is from PickleRich7717. It's a 5-star review titled, It's Just Like Old Times. And he says, Conan O'Brien needs a friend is like a warm hug from your favorite uncle your parents tell you not to go around.
Oh. That was a good one.
We are the pedophile of podcasts. Well, that's fantastic. That's really good.
But he did give you 5 stars.
Right, but that might have been for my craftiness as a pedophile.
But maybe it's the type of uncle they say don't go around him because he's too cool. He'll get you into a world that's too creative and too cool and too fun.
He'll buy you alcohol. That's that uncle. He'll he'll take you to your first
this is all going the same place.
Megadeth concert. I don't know.
It's all headed to the same place eventually. He got me alcohol. He dulled my senses.
Oh.
Sorry, but it is. I would rather be, follow me on this. Mm-hmm. I would rather be the really hilarious uncle he never got to know because I was killed in World War I.
Oh, come on, Conan.
Because then I'm a picture on the wall and I'm kind of perfect. And he's hearing, oh my God, he could make people laugh. He was so great. What happened? Gassed in the trenches. Mustard gas. Blue foam was coming out of his mouth. You know what that blue foam was, little Billy? His lungs had liquefied. But man, was he funny. I don't know. Maybe that's the story I would prefer.
Okay.
That's what I'm aiming for. In a year from now, I want this guy to write back and go, Conan, you're the great, hilarious uncle everyone talks about from World War I. Who was gassed in the trenches.
Couldn't you have died saving someone?
No, I died and...
You died being saved.
Yeah. I was screaming for help and 3 guys came to drag me out and they were killed too.
Oh, Conan!
Yeah, and I didn't make it easier. I thrashed so much, they could have gotten me into an ambulance, but I was thrashing so much and saying, I don't want to die, I don't want to die. Oh my God, I don't want to die, I don't want to die. They were exposed to gas too and they died.
And that's why they don't want you to go around you as an uncle, because you're the shame of the family.
Yeah, yeah. There's no medal on the wall or anything. There's a photograph of me on the wall that's pretty faded. And it's from like 1918, and I'm in this whole unit of people that are looking at me with hate because they know I'm going to get them killed.
Or there's just a place on the wall where a frame used to be, and there's little dirt around it.
Yeah. There's no picture hanging there anymore. They threw the picture out a long time ago. What picture used to hang there? Oh, that was your uncle who got a bunch of people killed. But man, was he funny? He was funny.
You went from being a war hero to just being this disgraced figure in the family.
I know.
That's impressive.
Yeah. It's the way it went. It all goes downhill. Every idea with me, it's like those little marbles that go on a track that work off gravity. Everything has to go to the very, very bottom.
That's true.
The idea can start no matter how elevated it is. You're the kindly uncle, you know? And within 30 seconds, my brain will have taken that little idea down a crazy looping track till it's in my anus.
Oh, man.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, with Sona Movsesian and Conan O'Brien as himself. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. The show is engineered by Will Becton. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review featured on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.